Welcome to the Space Show, Rachel.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, what was the Big Bang?
Well, the Big Bang's the name we give to the beginning of the universe. There really wasn't a bang. I think perhaps we could call it big, but it's just a term that we use to describe the beginning of the universe as we know it.
So it's not like you see on TV where it starts in the middle of the screen and goes boom out.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And this is where the concepts become quite difficult to grasp in some ways, because we're talking about the actual space-time expanding rather than something blowing up and moving out into space-time. So it's really quite a different concept.
And what's the principal evidence for the Big Bang?
Oh, there's really, you know, quite a lot of evidence now that our model of the Big Bang is at least fundamentally correct. So the cosmic microwave background, the detection of that relic of a hot early dense phase was the first thing that was discovered in the mid-1960s, so that really set us on the path to thinking that this model was correct. But we have a very good model of how the elements formed, you know, how we got oxygen and nitrogen and all that. That's an integral part of the Big Bang model. And then more recently, we've been looking at how matter is distributed in the universe, and dark matter and baryonic matter and dark energy, and all of these lead to a very consistent picture of what our universe looks like. Of course, the other element is that the universe is expanding, which we're quite sure is the case, and more recently we've discovered that expansion is accelerating. So all of these, you know, come together to give us a model of the universe.
And when did the Big Bang occur?
Oh, well, that's one thing that we've those numbers have firmed up in the last few years, and so we now think it was 13.7 billion years ago.
Well, the Planck results 13.8.
It's 13.7, 13.8, yeah, somewhere around there.
Which is a big improvement from when I was younger, when they said anywhere between 10 and 20 billion years ago.
That's right. No, it's the numbers, you know, the errors are coming down on those numbers now.
Now, what happened to the universe in its first moments? Something that we only found out about in the last, 20, 30 years.
Okay, so the idea is it started out as a very small, very dense thing, I guess you would say, and then expanded. But the hypothesis has been that in the very early phase, and we're talking about in the first 10 to the minus 35 or 37 seconds, that there was an exponential increase in the expansion rate, that it underwent some sort of phase change and increased in size by perhaps 60 orders of magnitude or something like that. And this has been termed an inflationary period in the universe. And then after that, it basically, whatever the physical reason for that was, changed, and then we just went through a normal, you know, the sort of normal expansion that we measure at the current time. But there have been quite strong reasons to suggest that early inflationary phase may have existed. It solved a number of puzzles that we have about the universe as we observe it today.
So would it be fair to describe it that early inflation is like an airbag going off in a car crash, and then after that the bag just slowly expands?
I've never heard that before, but it's a great analogy. Yes, yeah.
Okay. Has there been any direct evidence for inflation?
Not so far, no. As I said, it solves a number of puzzles that we have about the universe as we observe it today. You know, for example, that it's homogeneous on very large scales, and that is difficult to understand unless there was, you know, this early inflationary phase occurred. But there's been no direct evidence. It's been a theory of Alan Guth's. A very elegant theory, but just a theory.
Now, in Alan Guth's book, which by coincidence, I'm just reading,
yeah.
reached the top of my to-read pile.
Good premonition.
He says that we would never be able to find direct evidence of that.
Yes, well, I mean that's probably a pessimistic view, and during the early part of this century, there were a number of papers published recognising that such a rapid expansion would in fact create gravity waves, and that those gravity waves would leave an imprint at a later time on the cosmic microwave background. So that's all been quite widely recognised for about the last 10 years.
Yes. Well, I must point out this book was written in 1997.
In 1997, I think our confidence, that gravity waves would be detected was much less, A, and B, the work that I'm talking about wasn't done until, 5 or 10 years later.
So what have the researchers at the Harvard Smithsonian Centre for Astrophysics found?
Well, so the hypothesis was that the gravity waves would be created, and that's quite a robust prediction. The gravity waves decay as the universe expands, so in the universe today they would be essentially undetectable.
By the way, what are gravity waves, briefly?
Well, gravity waves are one of the last predictions of Einstein's theory of general relativity to be verified, okay? And what he predicted was that where there was a catastrophic event, where mass moved through space, large masses moved through space, that it would create a ripple in the space-time, and that these ripples would move out at the speed of light, and so effectively what would happen is that the space around you would pulsate as the gravity wave passed across mm-hmm. your region of space-time. Now these pulsations are extremely small and therefore very difficult to detect today. There's a magnificent experiment called LIGO, which we believe will have the sensitivity over the next year or two to detect gravity waves directly from things like colliding black holes, but they haven't actually done it yet. Mm-hmm. The sensitivity is almost there, but they haven't made the detection yet.
Well, back to this new discovery.
Yes, but colliding black holes will create gravity waves, but so would this early inflationary period in the early universe. And so what would happen is those gravity waves, which would be quite powerful when they were initially generated, but as the universe expands, they would become smaller and smaller. But at the time of the cosmic microwave background, where matter and light are decoupling, they would be sufficiently strong to leave a particular imprint on the light from the cosmic microwave background. Okay, and these papers 10 years ago were able to predict exactly what that signature would look like, and the signature is in the polarization of the light. And the polarization of the light, instead of being random, would have particular signals on scales of a degree or few degrees, which is a bit larger than the size of the moon. And those signals, we're not aware of any other way to detect signals. Signals like that. So as far as we know, no other physical process can do that except the gravity waves from the early inflationary period.
So how do they go about doing this?
How do they detect the polarization? Mm. Well, so this requires extremely sensitive measurements of the cosmic microwave background, and they've been doing this with a telescope at the South Pole. In fact, there's two telescopes at the South Pole that have been doing these measurements. They're sort of sitting side by side, basically. So one run with led by the collaboration from Harvard, and the other led by a collaboration that involves Chicago and Caltech. And both of them have detected the polarization, but it's looking for a particular signal in the polarization, right? And so, and this is where it gets quite technical, because there are actually a number of things that will give systematic polarized signals, and so it's a matter of understanding which, you know, what they're seeing and what's creating those signals.
One might be surprised to hear there are telescopes at the South Pole. We've covered this in the space show previously, but of course it's actually quite fine down in Antarctica much of the time, isn't it?
It's fantastic. It is in fact an extremely good place to put telescopes for multiple reasons. These are actually radio telescopes, and so there's not a lot of interference at the South Pole, because there's not a lot of people running around with mobile phones and things like that. You know, at optical wavelengths, it's also very good, because the atmosphere is very steady. You know, so the seeing is good, particularly just, you know, at reasonable heights above the ice. There are obviously no cities down there, so there's no light pollution. But it is cold, so you've got to be able to operate your telescope in sub-zero temperatures.
Yes, yes.
But there are some distinct advantages.
And they're obviously then looking at the southern sky area of the...
Correct, yes.
Now, has this finding confirmed, or perhaps even refuted, some of the existing explanations of the early universe?
Well, it's confirmed. This is the first detection of a signal from the inflationary time. And so... today it's being widely interpreted as we have directly detected, you know, that very early time in the universe, and the measurement is pretty close to what had been predicted. It's at a slightly suggesting that inflation started at a slightly earlier time than so. I think, you know, the old theories said 10 to the minus 35 seconds, and what they're seeing, they believe, is 10 to the minus 37 seconds. But it's pretty close, and the signal is a factor of two larger than was predicted because of that. Basically, it's pretty much in accord with what had been suggested.
So this stronger signal... It doesn't mean a major rewrite of the theory.
No.
Just a tinkering.
It really is just a tinkering around the edges.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are you excited about this discovery?
Oh yeah. Oh, well, look. This is extraordinary. It's just truly extraordinary. I mean, I just think it defies imagination to think that the physics that we can write on a sheet of paper still works when we get to a universe that is 10 to the minus 35 seconds old. I mean, it's just, the numbers are so small, they're unimaginable, you know, and so, yes, I think this is extraordinarily exciting. The other thing is that the fact that this time existed in the universe starts to tell us that the grand unified theories, so in other words, the idea that quantum physics and gravity come together in a single theory, is in fact correct. Okay, so this is about quantum gravity. So it's the first indication we have that our notion that, you know, that gravity and, you know, quantum mechanics come together. So that's very exciting.
And will this spark off new research directions?
Well, yes, I mean, this always happens. So the leaders of this experiment at Harvard, this has been a 10-year program for them to build this telescope and go after the signal. So all credit to them that they stuck it out and actually pulled it off. And in fact, one of the very exciting things I should say is that in less than 2 weeks, Melbourne Uni is getting a new faculty member from the US, who is one of the very highly regarded young researchers on the other team. So he works on the South Pole telescope, but has been doing exactly these experiments. And so so this will really open these areas out. I certainly know that Christian, who's the guy coming to join us at Melbourne, has a very full program of very exciting experiments that he's planning to do at the South Pole over the next 5 years, and so I think this discovery is only going to, you know, spur on that sort of activity.
Well, maybe we can just twist his arm and get him on the space show.
I'm absolutely certain you'll be able to. It's very good for us, and it'll be very good for him too.
Well, thank you for joining us on the space show, Rachel.
It's a pleasure, Andrew.